Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. He's raised more money than any other contender for the GOP presidential nomination, and still, Mitt Romney trails John McCain and Rudy Giuliani by a fair piece in the national polls. But with both McCain and Giuliani carrying baggage of their own, the Mormon ex-governor of Massachusetts is still very much in the race. He's on the cover of Time and 60 Minutes. He's got the money and the hair and the track record of business success. Could he do it? Up next on Point, we get up to the minute with the dark horse presidential candidacy of Republican Mitt Romney. Joining me now from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine. She wrote this week's cover story on Mitt Romney, What Romney Believes. Karen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
What Romney believes, of all the things you could ask, that's kind of loaded. Belief gets next to faith. Are you putting faith on the cover with Mitt Romney here? Are you putting the Mormon question front and center?
We did. In fact, we addressed the Mormon cover the Mormon question on the cover as well, and in a separate story by Nancy Gibbs. So this is actually a package of two stories, one of which I did, which takes a look at his, his philosophical beliefs and his political beliefs. And also, it's an introductory story. While, people in Massachusetts are very familiar with Mitt Romney, he's still an unknown quantity to most of the rest of the country.
You no doubt watched him on 60 Minutes last night, but of course interviewed him yourself up close and personal. How does he come across on TV, on the stump, toe-to-toe?
Well, I think that was an extraordinarily favorable story last night on 60 Minutes, and I think it got across exactly the message that Mitt Romney wants to get across, which is that, he is an agent of change, a Washington outsider at the time when he and others believed that the country might be ready for one. When I traveled some with Mitt Romney, I found a lot of interest in him, and generally that out on the stump, I went with him to Iowa and to South Carolina. There's a lot of interest, particularly among voters who are not comfortable with their other choices, John McCain and Rudy Giuliani.
But you've got the question raised, what does Romney really believe, which also goes to shifting positions. Mike Wallace raised it last night, saying some critics say about you that you're a poster child for what they call chameleon politics. When you look at the faith issue, the Mormonism issue, and then the issue of Romney's changed positions on abortion, on gay rights, on gun control, which looks like the bigger stumbling block for this candidate, Karen?
Well, I actually believe in the long run it is the fact that he has shifted so many positions on political issues and on social issues. I think that is one of the main reasons that conservative voters aren't quite sure yet whether they can trust him. All of his shifts seem to be moving their direction, whether it's on, abortion or any other of a number of issues. But they're not totally sure that this is genuine.
Let's listen for just a minute, Karen, to Mike Wallace with Romney last night, asking about that reputation as a flip-flopper or political chameleon, someone who will change his views to get elected.
If you look at anybody who's a political statesman, they better learn how to change their mind when they realize they're wrong. I don't criticize Senator McCain for saying he voted against the Bush tax cuts, now saying he's for the Bush tax cuts. He made the change that I respect. Mayor Giuliani has made some pretty significant changes as well with regards to abortion and funding of abortion and gun laws and so forth. But you know what? That's learning from experience.
I'm not the only one, Karen, says Mitt Romney last night on 60 Minutes. And, he's pointing at something there, which is others have changed and there's no perfect candidate up against him at this point.
That's exactly right. The real problem he has at the moment running against John McCain and Rudy Giuliani is the fact that he's unknown outside of Massachusetts. He is running against two men who are practically household names, and those are the things that really show up in the public opinion polling at this point in a campaign. Who Romney is really trying to make the sale with now are party activists and conservative activists. These are the people who are going to be the opinion leaders, the kinds of people who bring other people along in a party primary.
And how do you gauge how that's going? I'm looking here at USA Today. Gallup poll figures May 4 to 6, and you've got Rudy Giuliani at 34%, John McCain 20, Mitt Romney at 7. CNN, Giuliani 25, McCain 23, Romney 10. In both of those, really lagging. What do the poll numbers tell us?
Well, in a couple of states, but in somewhat questionable polls, in New Hampshire, he is now claiming at least one poll where he is a point ahead. He's also a point ahead in Michigan. But, of course, these are the two states out of the entire country, the two media markets, where the Romney name is very, very well recognized. But on the other measures, I think, that matter even more than the general broad public opinion polls at this stage of the game, Romney's doing quite well. He raised more money than any other candidate in a election year where money is going to matter probably more than it ever has. He has built an extraordinarily top-notch political team around him. His hires have been extraordinarily impressive. And he also is getting some important endorsements. It's, among other things, he has much of Jeb Bush's operation working for him. In fact, he has the only endorsement at this point from a member of the Bush family, from the president's sister, Doro.
And what about the source of that money? People have looked closely to see, well, is it all coming from Utah? Is it a Mormon vote with the money? How's it spread around? Who's supporting Mitt Romney with all those big bucks?
Well, with that much money, you're getting it pretty much from everywhere. He's gotten a lot of money from Republican activists, but he's also raising in places where, you know, politicians have not generally raised before. He has a very, very large circle of people that he knows from his career in business. And yes, he's raising a lot from places like Utah. He seems to have very much energized the Mormon population, which is a pretty significant force, a political force in states not only like Utah, but Arizona and Nevada out west as well.
So, Karen, what would it take then to slingshot Romney from kind of the back of the pack, at least the leading pack at this point, to somewhere closer to the front? What's the scenario in which the dark horse becomes the light horse?
Well, one thing he's got to do, and that he's already done, is perform well in these Republican debates. There was one a week and a half ago in California where I think a lot of the pundits and a lot of the party regulars thought that Mitt Romney did better than anyone else on stage in presenting himself as a plausible president. There's another one tomorrow night in South Carolina. This is going to be extremely important for him not to make any gaffes, and certainly he has proven himself somewhat gaffe-prone out there on the campaign trail. And the other thing he's got to do is just keep working these early states, and he has certainly been doing that.
Karen, if you stand by for just a moment, we're going to hear in a few minutes from South Carolina, where that debate is on tomorrow. But joining me first in the studio is Jim Nuzzo. He is a Massachusetts Republican strategist and political analyst, does analysis for our home station, WBUR in Boston. He's with the Colchester Group, longtime watcher of Mitt Romney. Jim, thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So here we are. We're still way off from those primary votes. A lot of months to go. A huge campaign chest built by Mitt Romney, outstripping everybody, but not winning in the polls. How do you look at this candidacy right now? Can this guy, who's changed on some fundamental values issues and who comes from a faith that is a minority faith in this country, can he do it?
Well, I think in addition to what Karen has put out both in her piece and in the piece regarding the Mormon issue, the biggest issue that I think Romney has to get past is that he is selling himself as a candidate who can manage. But frankly, those of us who have been in Massachusetts, and I'm a Republican in Massachusetts, know him as all hat and no cattle. I mean, this is a guy who spent 4 years, basically only 4 years, in the public sector. And when
that is after his big business career, made a ton of money on Domino's Pizza and Staples,
right,
and everything else.
Remember,
then 4 years as Massachusetts governor.
But remember, those times in business were not as a manager, but as a venture capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that he ran a company. So he has only 4 years of executive experience. And I've got two words for you: big dig. If someone is saying that
this is
I'm going to
the public works project that went right through the middle of Boston, what about it?
Well, there's a $15 billion project that had $5 billion overrun.
Right.
Plus, anyone who is from the Northeast or has been reading USA Today knows about the problems that the Big Dig had last summer, in which we
had the ceiling falling down, a
death in the tunnel.
Of course, this predates Romney by a long patch, but you think that lands on him, that sort of couldn't manage the public works in his own backyard?
Well, if he has a $15 billion project and it's under his watch, at some point he either has to sort of had called attention to this far too early, or you can't go and take advantage of the term that I have been the executive leader of Massachusetts and say, yes, but that $15 billion project, right. Well, that's not on my watch.
Karen, what about that? Rudy Giuliani has all kinds of detractors in New York, and it doesn't seem necessarily, though, to dog him when he goes on the trail outside of New York. What about Mitt Romney and his base?
Well, I think Jim has some interesting points. And also, what is striking to listen to him on the campaign trail, Massachusetts is more often the butt of his jokes than, you know, something that he points to as an accomplishment.
Liberal Massachusetts, right.
Exactly, exactly. And the one really big accomplishment that happened on his watch, the Massachusetts health care plan, is something that he does not brag about. In fact, when I was with him, at least, he would barely mention it.
This is the universal health plan package that he pushed for, Jim?
Well, absolutely. And the reason is it was one of those stealth deals in which it looked very good when it went through. But now, ask Governor Patrick in Massachusetts what the bill is going to be in terms of how much it's going to cost. And the numbers are staggering.
Let's listen to just a little bit of what Mike Wallace put to Mitt Romney last night. 60 Minutes played archival footage of Mitt Romney at a 1994 debate in which he came out solidly in favor of allowing abortion.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country. I believe that since Roe v. Wade has been the law for 20 years, that we should sustain and support it. And my personal beliefs, like the personal beliefs of other people, should not be brought into a political campaign.
That's Romney in 1994. Now Romney says his beliefs on abortion rights have changed, and he worries that procedures like embryonic cloning for stem cell research have diminished the value of life.
I believe that we have cheapened the value of human life, and that it's important to allow states to enact reasonable pro-life legislation. And I am pro-life and favor that legislation.
And the woman's right to choose.
Let each state make their own choice.
Let each state make their own choice. Jim, Mitt Romney says, look, I've lived, I've learned, I've changed. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's interesting is it's sort of an anti-profiles in courage. There are four major places where he's changed. Women's right to choose, same-sex marriage, tax cuts, and gun control. And it seems that each time that he's made the choice, he's made the choice in a way in which it sort of goes to his political advantage. Yes, people grow, but what's fascinating to me is it always grows in a way that helps him. One other thing, though, Tom and Karen, I'd love to get your thoughts about this. I think he's particularly hurt by what's happened with Giuliani this week.
Why? What?
When Giuliani was in Houston, he was speaking in front of the Baptists, and he had a action that reminded me a bit like JFK when he went and spoke to the Baptists and said, I'm a Catholic. Mm-hmm. Giuliani said, I'm pro-choice.
Right. And deal with it.
Deal with it. It's right here. So in a sense,
and if you want to win, you better have somebody like me as your candidate.
Absolutely. That's what he said. Take me or leave me, but this is my position. So it makes Romney's changes in position look even more groveling.
On tax cuts, Karen Tumulty, the shift there is he previously refused to pledge no new taxes. Now he's done that for a big organization in Washington that asks every candidate to sign that pledge.
Not only that, he was the first Republican candidate in the field to sign that pledge. So it was not just a sort of a shift, but a run almost. And again, on gun control, he went from bragging when he was in Massachusetts that he doesn't always line up with the NRA to actually joining the NRA as a life member last August.
And claiming to be a lifetime hunter when that early hunting was, I forget what, but
I think it was like
two
one
minutes.
Quail or something like that.
Right.
And not damn.
A varmint.
Yeah, a varmint. Well, varmints, I suppose, need to be hunted, some might say, but it's not exactly a lifetime of hunting. There you go. People can change, people can shift, but Jim Nuzzo points out, interesting that it's always in the direction of what might be helpful in the polls. Jim and Karen, let's begin to turn to our listeners. We've got James calling from Fort Dodge, Iowa, important to Mitt Romney. James, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Most of the commentators that I've heard agree that George Bush intends to keep us in Iraq until the end of his term. My question to your guests on the show is that wouldn't you agree with me that if Mitt Romney or any other Republican for that matter doesn't advocate immediate withdrawal from Iraq, given the fact that Bush wants to keep us there until he swears out of office, that Republican candidate has virtually no chance of winning.
So is that the litmus test, a willingness to step up and say, I will withdraw? James, thanks for that. Let's listen for just a minute. Mike Wallace, of course, brought Iraq up. And here's Mitt Romney saying, talking about the Washington and the war and who should be held accountable.
Why do you think all of a sudden the Democrats are in charge?
Well, because of Iraq.
You mean the president screwed up in Iraq?
I think the administration made a number of errors.
Like, for instance?
Well, I don't think we were adequately prepared for what occurred. I don't think we had done enough planning. I don't think we'd considered the various downsides and risks.
Is George W. Bush.
Well, he's the person where the buck stops. But it's the whole administration.
They screwed up.
Well, they made mistakes. I'm not going to use the same phrase you would. And we're paying for those mistakes.
Mistakes were made, says Mitt Romney. Let's go to Tomah, Wisconsin. And Greg, did you see it? What do you think?
Hi, I did. And Tom, I love your program. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much.
I did see it last night for a little while. And the thing that concerned me the most was that Mr. Romney is proposing to increase our troops by 100,000.
Right.
He also said that he wants to hold a line on tax.
That is overall, not necessarily in Iraq, but boost the overall strength of the army by 100,000,
right.
A big jump, yeah?
Exactly. We already spend as much on our military as the rest of the world combined. When you combine that with holding a line on taxes, it sounds to me like we are going to have ever-rising budget deficits.
A recipe for deficits if you pump that up, but you promise you won't raise taxes. And that's an interesting observation. Jim, what about Romney and Iraq?
Well, I think one of the other issues that we haven't talked about is his absolute lack of foreign policy experience. This is a man who doesn't come with any background other than sort of international finance, not even running an international business. And we are coming into a world where our threats are all over the place, including perhaps a new Cold War with Russia.
Condoleezza Rice says no, but who knows? And there he stands.
And you've got a man who's asking to be the president, the commander-in-chief, who doesn't have this background. And I have a hard time seeing how Republicans, who typically are looking for someone who is strong in foreign policy, are going to put their chips behind someone who doesn't have this background. I mean, George Bush didn't have any, but at least he had his dad. And when he stopped listening to his dad, we saw what happened.
Karen, what about Romney, foreign policy, and Iraq in particular? And for that matter, the whole field, our caller from Wisconsin, Greg, says, you know, if they don't promise to get out, they're doomed. Do you buy that? Do you think the GOP is really so determined to hear that from a potential presidential nominee?
Well, first of all, it's important to remember he's running in a Republican primary at this
right.
point, not the Democratic primary. And at this point, there's not even a you know, leading Democratic candidate who's urging an immediate withdrawal. So I think it's interesting, and I think Jim alluded to this a little bit earlier. He's framing this as a management issue. And certainly that was the way, when I asked him about Iraq, the way he framed it, that the problem here has been that the war has been mismanaged. And Mitt Romney will rarely miss an opportunity to point out to you that his management style is vastly different from George Bush's. He insists that he will always find, you know, he insists upon listening to people who will disagree with him, that he loves the data. He loves to wallow in the data. Now,
yep.
whether this is going to be credible and whether voters are going to see this as an adequate substitute from just, you know, knowing the foreign policy right down, you know, in your DNA, I don't know. But that is certainly the frame that he is putting on the issue.
Hard to follow, though, data to a conclusion about Iraq. You've got to have a way of thinking that's a little bit bigger than numbers driven. At least it seems to me. Let me go to Paul in Milton, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Good.
And guest. I did watch 60 Minutes last night, and the thing that struck me in a follow-up question that Mike Wallace did not ask, back in 68 and 69, as part of his faith as a Mormon, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints,
yep.
to be more precise,
mm-hmm.
He was a missionary. And that was at the same time that the Vietnam War was going on, and he was not a part of that. From my perspective, it was the perfect draft dodge that really no one can criticize because he did it under his faith. same time that Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar and was roundly criticized for being a Rhodes Scholar during Vietnam, but also the awareness that the young Romney had, because his father at the same time was saying he was being brainwashed by the generals of Vietnam when he was running for president. He
made that remark and is said to have paid dearly for it, ultimately in losing to Richard Nixon in the primary.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that you know, he needs to answer. We talked about his lack of foreign policy, and experiencing him as a governor of Massachusetts, the state I'm residing in, he has been an absentee personality all along. I mean, he came in and ran against the appointed governor after Paul Cellucci took an ambassadorship.
And you say absent in a way from day one on Vietnam. He's thought about that. He's talked about that. Karen, what does Romney say? You know, our caller says, well, the perfect excuse for a draft dodge. Is that what his missionary service in France amounts to?
Well, I did talk to him about this very subject, and he says that his decision to go to France and as a Mormon missionary was the closest thing that he has ever come to having a true crisis of faith in his life, primarily because he had just begun. He was seeing his wife, the woman, Ann Romney, who is now his wife. He was deeply in love. He said the idea of having to be away from her for 2.5 years just was something he could barely think about. And also, he said he was very aware of the fact that other young men of his age were going to Vietnam. However, this Mormon mission was very much of a family tradition. His brother had done it before him. His father,
Mormons do it.
I believe
they
even
do
his grandfather. And so he said that in the end, it was Ann Romney who talked him into doing it and told him that if he failed to do it, he'd regret it for the rest of his life. And then when he came back, I believe he had a fairly high draft number.
As in not so vulnerable to going.
Right, in the lottery.
Yeah, Jim, so, is it fair to look at this and say, oh, the perfect excuse for not going? He says now he sure wishes he had.
Well, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But what is fascinating to me is a point that the caller raised dealing with his father. I mean, Karen, I'm looking actually backwards, or upside down, I should say, of the Time magazine cover.
Sitting on our table here.
And when you look at it upside down, he looks exactly like his father. And the fact that he chose Michigan with the car that made George Romney so many millions of dollars behind him, what's also fascinating to me is to what extent is he just sort of filling out the George Romney mandate. He is now going to make Dad's legacy come true by actually succeeding where Dad could not.
Karen, we've had Bush upon Bush. Now here's Romney following Romney. Do we have to look at the father-son psychodrama here?
That is exactly what I look at in my story. In fact, the opening, the article opens with Mitt Romney coming across a letter that his father wrote him all those years ago in 1968 when he was off in France doing his Mormon missionary work. And it is a 6-page typewritten single-spaced letter where George Romney pours out his heart to his son about his losing a Republican race where at one point he was actually the leader in. And it was a very, very it was about more than one gaffe, more than one, you know, saying he was brainwashed over Vietnam. But it is striking to look at his career and his father's career and the degree to which he, you know, they were both blue state governors who won as Republicans. They were both business successes. And Mitt Romney today is within just a few months of the exact age that George Romney was when he ran for president. So it is really difficult not to see the parallels.
I want to turn to South Carolina, where Mitt Romney and the rest of the Republican pack will be on parade again tomorrow night in big debate. Joining us from Columbia, South Carolina, is Bleas Graham. He's professor of political science at the University of South Carolina, been following Southern politics for more than 30 years. Bleas Graham, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, good to be here.
So give us a sense, in your state, in South Carolina, and it will be very important, how is Mitt Romney translating?
Well, I think he has traction. I think he's finding supporters and some attraction, particularly among younger white male voters.
What is it about Romney that you think is drawing that to him?
Well, I think he looks presidential and acts presidential. Maybe just listening to some of the discussion here, there's a question about substance, but at least the surface seems attractive.
and his religion? Is that a hang-up for South Carolina, where you've got, you know, a good fundamentalist Baptist and all the rest?
Well, for some, perhaps, but not for all. I think the rough approximation among South Carolinians, white South Carolinians, is that about a third are evangelicals, and among that group, some are going to be suspicious of Mormonism, but there's a wide variety among Christians in South Carolina, and some are going to be accepting, others are going to be questioning, some will reject him.
And how do you look at Mitt's baggage compared to, let's say, Rudy Giuliani's or John McCain's? You know, everybody comes with a kind of, with the experience of a life and the inconsistencies or whatever you want to call them that come along with that. How do you think South Carolinians are weighing the relative downside of these three men, for starters?
Well, it's probably still an open question. I think really South Carolina Republicans are, to some extent, have become complacent and perhaps really aren't as energetic or focused as they may have been in previous rounds. So part of the situation here is going to be able to focus and rally the party. Senator McCain certainly has the tradition, has the history here, has the organization. Mayor Giuliani has a sort of star quality, I think, that attracts people, particularly, say, among a lot of Republicans who relocated to South Carolina, managers and retirees.
So that complacency I'm interested in, is that defeatism among South Carolina Republicans, or they've been in power so long that they don't think they have to worry about it? Surely not this time.
Well, I really think it's more the latter. I don't think it's defeatism, but I think part of it is maybe a need to react to some of the enthusiasm that the Democrats were showing here in an earlier week. By comparison, the show has been almost exclusively a Republican show, and this round it doesn't appear to be that way.
Jim, Mitt Romney is a guy who can get the party fired up?
Hard to say that. I mean, one name we aren't talking about, and I think one of the reasons for the complacency that Breeze is talking about, is Fred Thompson. I think there's an awful
former
lot of
senator now, actor, and ahead of Romney in some polls. For example, CNN, he was ahead just a week or two ago.
And he hasn't announced. He doesn't have any money out yet. I mean, I think there's an awful lot of Republicans, South Carolina, New Hampshire, wherever, who are just holding their fire to find out as to whether indeed Thompson does become a candidate. And if that happens, it shakes the entire race up. And frankly, I think it takes an awful lot of air out of the sails of Mitt Romney.
Karen, do you see him as maybe not waiting to catch the nomination when McCain or Giuliani stumble, but rather vulnerable to someone in the wings, Thompson, Gingrich?
You know, certainly the Republican field is just extraordinarily unsettled right now. Now, Fred Thompson had a very big speech Friday before last in Orange County, California. This was supposed to be sort of his coming out party with Republican activists. He didn't do so well.
We're talking this hour about Republican presidential contender Mitt Romney and whether big money can turn into a GOP nomination for the Mormon ex-governor of Massachusetts. We've got a great crew with us. Karen Tumulty wrote a big cover story on Mitt this week for Time Magazine. She joins us from Washington. From Columbia, South Carolina, Bleas Graham is here, professor of political science at the University of South Carolina. He's been watching Southern politics for a long time there. With me in the studio from the Colchester Group, Republican strategist and political analyst Jim Nuzzo. At a debate in New York City last Monday, the Reverend Al Sharpton came on. Here are his remarks on presidential candidate Mitt Romney's religious beliefs. They drew fire from critics. Let's listen to what Sharpton had to say.
And as for the one Mormon running for office, those that really believe in God will defeat him anyway. So don't worry about that. That's a temporary situation.
Those who really believe in God will defeat him anyway. Some fancy dancing on that in the days after, but no apology from Al Sharpton on that. Last night on 60 Minutes, Romney said that his Mormon religion should not preoccupy voters. Instead, he said, what should matter is that he is a man of faith.
What's at the heart of my faith is a belief that there's a creator, that we're all children of the same God. And then fundamentally, the relationship you have with your spouse is important and eternal. This isn't just some temporary convenience here on earth, but we're people that are designed to live together as male and female, and that we're going to have families, and that there's a great line in the Bible that children are an inheritance of the Lord, and happy is he who has or hath his quiver full of them.
There's a lot to look at right in that one long segment. Let me take a call from Columbia, South Carolina first. Matt, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling. I'm actually a Mormon living in South Carolina. They do live outside of Utah.
So you're right in the sweet spot there. What do you see, Matt?
Well, what I see is that when critics like Mr. Sharpton come after Mitt Romney because of his religion, I know that they're just targeting one man, but I don't think they realize that they're actually hitting millions of people in the country by making the argument that his beliefs are out of the norm, therefore he isn't qualified. Putting this religious test on it really affects, all of us of his faith, and I don't think it's fair.
So, Matt, you're a Mormon in South Carolina. If Mitt Romney doesn't make it, despite all of his money and the experience he brings, and if kind of anti-Mormonism seems to be a piece of that, what's the message to you as an American Mormon?
Well, you know what? Even if he doesn't end up being successful, I'm hoping that at the very least, by getting all this out in the open, perhaps we can put it behind us.
Yeah, we hear it. Sensitivity right there in Columbia, and it's understandable. Let me take another call from Boston. Janet, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
And your staff is wonderful.
Great. What do you think? What do you see, Janet?
Well, one of the things, and I just had a couple of very quick comments regarding Sharpton's comment. No one ever said anything about Romney's comment about Tar Baby.
I forget what it was. He referred to some intractable issue as a tar baby.
Yeah, and he used it for the big dig, but it's one you don't use.
Well, I've used it myself, I have to say, so, you know, shame on me, too, if it's off the... But what do you see in that, Janet?
But the other point is Tony Snow used it weeks before. It's not like he could say he didn't know.
Are you saying Mitt Romney's a racist?
You know what? I'm black in Boston. I never felt the love. The other thing I'd like to know from your speakers, is how did he come to Massachusetts? Because it seemed like Karl Rove, at one point, there was talk of Karl Rove telling, bringing in governors at certain points, or at least candidates, and he was just a mystery. And also to point out that in 2005, when he said the tunnels were safe, we were, the next day we saw 1,400 leaks.
Right. But Janet, we've got it. Not feeling the love there. But Jim, to be fair, I mean, Romney came to Boston in the way many people did. He went to Harvard Law School and the Harvard Business School.
And then he stayed, like I did. I came to graduate school, and I stayed, too, 30 years. He went to Bain Capital, which at that time was a very small venture capital firm, made his home here. I don't think this was part of a bizarre Karl Rove experiment.
But what about the race piece here? Karen, let me put that to you. Janet says, I'm black in Boston, and I never felt the love on race terms. What about Romney and race?
Well, Jim would probably be able to talk about his record in Massachusetts with more authority than I can, but there's a lot of sensitivity because, of course, there's tension, historic tension between the Mormon Church and particularly African Americans. And not until a few decades ago were African Americans able to be priests in the Mormon Church, which is, a pretty fundamental position.
However, a function open to all male Mormon laymen. It's not like being a priest in the Catholic Church. Yeah.
However, if you look back at the Romney family, they have a pretty extraordinary legacy on race in that George Romney, even at a point when his church had all these barriers to blacks, actually split with the Republican Party in 1964 and refused to support Barry Goldwater's ticket because he believed that the party was not sufficiently progressive on civil rights. And, you know, that was a very brave thing for any Republican to be doing in 1964.
We've got callers who want to talk on exactly that point. Kelly's calling from Newfane, Vermont. Kelly, you're on the air.
Why, hello there.
Hi.
So I've been living out in Utah for the winters skiing, and so I've been pretty much submerged in the Mormon faith all around me.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I've really come to discover is that what we've known is that a lot of African Americans and women are not allowed to hold any sort of position in the church. They're more than welcome to become members, but they can't hold a position.
I don't think that's true for African Americans any longer. I can't speak for the Mormon Church, but I think that policy is some decades put behind them now.
It must be very, very new, though. I mean, it has to be.
Why do you say that? Because it looks white to you in Utah. Or
and I mean, we're surrounded by it. I see it every day out there. And the other thing that I was most impressed with, too, about Senator Orrin Hatch is there's really no separation of church and state through Mormons. So that's what I'm most concerned with. If with a Mormon president, I really want to see separation of church and state. Out in Utah, there is zero separation. I mean, it is a Republican state through and through. It's unbelievable. So I'm just really intrigued of separation of church and state from Mitt Romney.
Kelly, let us pick it up. And Karen, let me put that to you. Romney's been asked again and again, are you going to have a moment like John F. Kennedy where you stand up and say, you know, in a speech loud and clear, I am not beholden to any religious authority. I'll serve as the president and only the American people. The Kennedy-style speech, he hasn't exactly done that. How does he talk about his faith and the power of the presidency?
Well, he does say, however, that he's not running for preacher-in-chief. Mm-hmm. He is running for commander-in-chief. And, you know, again, the relations between the Mormon church and the government have been, are also complicated. And, in fact, there's a very strong strain of Mormonism of keeping the two very, very separate. And, in fact, there was a prayer in school case in Texas that went all the way to the Supreme Court about whether prayers could be uttered over loudspeakers at school football games. And the lead plaintiffs on that were Mormons.
But of course, that's in Texas, where they're not a minority. Kelly looks at Utah and says it looks hand in glove to her in the home country there.
Exactly. Certainly there are people who will argue that Utah has a very strong theocratic element. But if you look at Mormonism in other parts of the country, there is, in fact, a very strong mistrust of having the government mingled with religion.
I want to go to South Carolina and you, please, Graham, to ask how that issue plays there, the separation. But let's listen first to Mitt Romney again last night on 60 Minutes, speaking about the history of polygamy in Mormonism and how it troubles him.
There's part of the history of the church is past that I understand is troubling to people. Polygamy, which was outlawed in our church in the 1800s, that's troubling to me. I have great-great-grandfather. They were trying to build a generation out there in the desert, and so he took additional wives as he was told to do, and I must admit, I can't imagine anything more awful than polygamy.
Blease Graham in Columbia, South Carolina, there's a tradition, and then there's now, and then there are the questions about the separation of church and state. I mean, for a political candidate for the presidency to even have to say the word polygamy in reference to his own life or family is a little awkward. But Romney there saying he can't imagine anything more awful. Leave aside theology for a moment. What about just the power of his church? Do South Carolinians appear worried about it, afraid of it or not?
I don't really have a sense of widespread worry. I'm sure it's a part of the informal dialogue, but I think most South Carolinians, generally speaking, are reluctant even to talk about religion in public discourse. I mean, they talk about other things like family values, the Confederate flag, the abortion issue. But generally speaking, I think this whole public discussion about religion usually is I wouldn't say muted, but Not quite as rigorous as we're doing it here.
Let's hear from another citizen who has been in a state where Mitt was governor. Eddie's calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Hi, Eddie, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
When Mitt Romney was running for governor, I met him at my son's elementary school and talked to him outside for a few minutes. And I don't know how to say this gently. He scared the crap out of me. He's smart. He's good looking. He's got lots of money. He's really slick. And what scares me is he'll say or do anything, I think, to get elected. He's like the definition for me of an empty suit. He was a lackluster governor, you know, all smoke and no substance to me anyway. And, you know, I just have this feeling that he's really good at photo ops and sound bites and has a smart crew behind him. Mm. A lot of money. Money people love him from his Bain experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he's almost dangerous because my question is not about his religion or about his stances on things, because I can't believe him, but who is this man, and what if he did become president? What kind of president would he make? What kind of man is he? And I think there's nothing there except opportunism and ambition, and that's what scares me because he's so well packaged.
And what kind of policies would he really pursue? There's the slick mitt complaint, Jim Nuzzo.
Absolutely. The problem that you don't have with him as opposed to people who've been in public life for a long period of time is you can only look at his positions because you really don't have a track record that you can sort of pinpoint to particular votes or particular decisions that he's made over 15 or 20 years. Even the position that he's going to run as a manager, as our friend from Amherst said, real questionable as to whether or not he has a very good sort of perspective in that. And frankly, if Mayor Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, who is talking very seriously about getting into the race, does get into the race as an independent, he's going to go after that managerial experience. And so I think that he's going to be squeezed on a number of ways.
Let's take a call from Pound Ridge, New York. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, like, we're hearing a lot about religion and a lot about, you know, abortion and issues that are, you know, talked about in every race. And from the whole campaign in general, I'd like to hear more about issues that are, you know, kind of facing us in the here and now, like energy and like the war, issues that are, you know, really going to be biting whoever wins in 4 years rather than, you know, 50 or whatever.
And pretty gigantic.
And actually decides on bigger issues like abortion, which we're never going to get to, really.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've got giant stuff sitting right in front of us. Karen, is he on the record in a persuasive way? Let's say on energy. You know, we're looking at a giant challenge on that front. What does Mitt Romney have to say about it?
You know, he really hasn't filled out his policy positions very much. But, you know, I think also at this point, none of the candidates really has. We're very much in the phase of the sort of getting to know you part of the race.
And Iraq, is he saying, I'm just going to manage it better? That hardly seems like a solution at this point.
Well, he has called for increasing the numbers in the military. But again, this is not, you know, and even these debates that we've been seeing so far have very, very little interaction allowed among the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really don't get a very good sense of who's where on what.
So Blease Graham in South Carolina, do you have the sense then that people are running, you know, on that kind of surface image at this point? Is that working for Mitt Romney in that case, or are South Carolinians getting lined up to hear the nitty-gritty? What are you going to do about oil, about energy, about really going to do about Iraq, not just building a bigger military?
I think at this point it really is more along the lines of the get to know the candidates. I mean, South Carolina is interesting in that it's a relatively small media market. A candidate with money could buy most of the media outlets and get out a message. And I would think that would go roughly in stages of establishing recognition and then moving on to issue positions.
So at this point, as you handicap it, could you see Mitt? I know it's months away,
right. But
do you still see him in position to take what will be a very important primary? He says his strategy is, you know, say what you want. I'm going to swing in here and take early primaries. I've got a good poll number out of New Hampshire now, he says. Does it look possible, doable to you in South Carolina all these months in advance?
It certainly does. I mean, to use NASCAR language, he wasn't a pole starter, but he's coming up in third or fourth position fairly quickly.
Karen, do you write this guy off then? He's got a lot of money. He's from his business experience, you know, has experience in looking at the main thing. Maybe he's gaming it well.
Well, I think at this point you can't write any of the main contenders in the Republican race off. It is so unsettled.
Jim, how about it? Is there a scenario that's obvious to you which swings Mitt Romney out front despite his big money but low poll numbers now?
Yeah, the scenario would be that Giuliani continues to drift left, that McCain implodes as he's very wont to do so, and Thompson doesn't run. At that point, Mitt Romney looks like the viable candidate. That's what he has to work at.
Does it sound to you, Karen, as though he still feels that sitting out there for him? Do you sense any diminution, or is he still in full tilt on this thing?
I think he's absolutely still in full tilt on this, and he is working the early states in particular very, very hard.
So, Blease, all the cameras will be fired up tomorrow night in South Carolina. Where do you see Mitt? Is he right there neck and neck in your state with the McCain, Giuliani?
Maybe not neck and neck in terms of having the experience or the organization as Senator McCain does. or maybe not the instant star quality of Mayor Giuliani, but he's certainly there in the mix.
And working it very hard. Bleese Graham at the University of South Carolina, great talking with you. Hope we'll hear from you again as the campaign goes forward. Thanks a lot for being here today.
You're welcome.
And Karen Tumulty with the big cover story in Time Magazine this week on Mitt Romney. Karen, always good to speak with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jim, I see you still looking at this cover photo upside down and seeing George, Father George, in Mitt's suit there.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Well, generation after generation with the Romneys. Jim Nuzzo, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.